listeners. This is Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. And I am your host, Zach Gandra. And with me, as always, is the inimitable Steve Gandra. How are you, Steve?
I think I finally decided I like inimitable better than immutable.
I, on our car ride down to the studio today, I think you were quite immutable. In fact, I had to tell you a couple times, like, I got it. I heard what you said.
You were pretty immutable yourself.
Yeah, we had a passionate discussion on a possible team member that we could be bringing on to the Excellent Cultures team, and it was good. You know,
good discussion.
Yep, we're open to new team members, so that's what we do. But anyways, today is a special day in Seattle. Whether you're listening live or you're listening via podcast, we're excited about the Seahawks again. We promised not to talk to them over the show. About the show, but most likely Steve will bring up some cultural remark regarding Pete Carroll and his cultural prowess of business leadership. You thinking, Steve, you'll probably do that?
I think I want to talk about our guest today. I'm actually more excited about Simon's story and how he's a role model entrepreneur that lots of entrepreneurs and future entrepreneurs can learn from.
Yeah, today is the first real show that we've probably gotten to talk to somebody I know better than you do for the first time. Like, normally I'm just kind of moderating you and making sure you're not too immutable.
And making sure that I am immutable.
Or making sure that you are immutable. But today we get to talk to a good friend of mine. If you are a entrepreneur desiring to be an entrepreneur, or interested in investment and finance, you're going to want to tune in to our show right now, or you're going to want to share this with somebody. Today's guest has been quoted by Forbes and CNBC. He's a great friend of mine, and he is in an industry that he's frustrated. So he was frustrated for a while in the industry he was, decided, I'm going to get out, I'm going to start my own online business, and I'm going to start my own company and do my own thing, and within months was very successful at doing it. And so we're excited to have him share with us today. Here we go. We have Simon Cunningham from LendingMemo.com. How you doing, Simon?
Doing great.
My clap track. That's not very professional.
Live radio can get pretty corny if you're not careful.
The unfortunate part about that, Steve, is we're not live. We're actually recording.
That's right. You're right.
We're in it. So, Simon, was our introduction for you okay, partially?
Yeah, I mean, I struggled to introduce myself as well, so it's all good.
Nice. That was a great answer.
I'm glad that I'm the color commentator today rather than the interviewer.
Yeah, Steve's the color commentator. So, Simon, I've known you for a while, and I've been able to watch your story at least for the last few years. You and I are good buddies. We work out of the same entrepreneurial type office, shared co-working space. Why don't you give us a few minutes of your story and fill in the blanks of everything we missed?
Okay, so I was born and raised in Michigan. Northern Michigan, kind of the
cold country.
Yeah, like very beautiful Great Lakes, sandy soil, pine trees, and good family value kind of culture where people just really valued the connections they had, and really beautiful and healthy in a lot of ways. But eventually I graduated with a degree in social work, but it just didn't excite me, and so I said, what really has excited me in life? And so for the majority of my life, it was actually the religion that I was born into and grew up with, and that was the Christian faith. And so I went off to seminary. I've been always somebody that has been excited by what is the most exciting thing I can do. That's what I do, right?
Nice.
Like, what's the most exciting thing I can imagine that I can find, that I can discover, and that's what I'm going to go do. And so I've always been that way, and that's gotten me into some trouble, but mostly it's gotten me to do some really amazing things. So I found a seminary in East Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya, and most of my friends went to school at TEDS or Regent or Calvin Seminary or all these different seminaries throughout the United States, but I thought seminary in Africa sounds way more fun. So I did that. That was awesome. Came back to the United States. I got a grant to do church planting in Seattle, in what is one of the least Christian neighborhoods in the United States. And I just thought that would be, again, the most exciting, weird, cool, interesting experience I could imagine, just trying to understand what makes people tick and why have they lost their religion and do they still value it, and just live here and be part of the neighborhood and So I did that for a number of years and eventually discovered that I was not the best at that. Made some mistakes along the way, had some victories, but ultimately realized that parts of that I just was not good at and not supposed to be good at, and that's okay. And switched over to socially responsible investing education and been doing that ever since. So that's definitely been the thing in my life which currently gives me a lot of purpose and a lot of excitement and is a joy to do. And I love being my own boss. Once you taste this blood, it's just hard to do anything else.
It's nice, like, right?
Yeah.
I think a couple of things I'm mashing up with your story here. I told Steve the same thing. Like, as soon as I get bored with excellent cultures and I have to manage something and we're not growing something, I'm out. I'm right. out, because that's not a fun journey. I mean, if you're an entrepreneurial right. spirit, that's not yep. what you're into.
Unless you're a manager. And
that's what I'm saying.
You know,
if you're not an entrepreneurial spirit, unless you, you know, there are those that are managers, and yep. I think I'm like you, I'm into the thrill. Okay, yeah. So you said a phrase that I think, well, I'm completely unfamiliar with, socially responsible investing.
Yeah, me too. I was going to ask about that.
Sure. Okay, so one of the things that I was, you know, I assume that, you know, This is not a religious statement that I'm going to say here, but one of the beautiful things about, I'll say, just ideology in general, so that could be commitment to environmentalism or even atheism or, you know, mindfulness education or whatever, all these big, huge kind of ideologies that people carry in Seattle. One of the things that my ideology I grew up with in Christianity was social justice. So I grew up in a family where we would read out of the book of Micah 6:8, what does God ask of you? To walk humbly and justly, or do justice, you know, all these phrases in the Bible that talked about helping the poor and advocating and being on the side of people who could not advocate for themselves. And one of those is the way that we understand money. So for instance, when people save for retirement, they usually do not think about the social implications of their choices. And that's the same with anything. That's the same with consumer, the way that they purchase their groceries, the way that they purchase their clothing. You know, I mean, how many people look at the labor standards of the companies that are behind the clothing they wear, and inadvertently they can be supporting slavery in developing nations. They don't even know it.
Right.
So it's our goal in my goal in life, and this is in everything, is to live in a way that fosters health so that, like, for instance, I remember trying to find socially responsible underwear here in Seattle, and it was very difficult. I eventually ended up having to buy it at American Apparel, which is a whole nother matzo ball of
right. wait a minute, socially responsible underwear.
Yeah. Yeah,
can you pause a moment and give us a definite, what in the heck is that?
Well, I mean, just think about it. If your underwear, and people don't think about underwear, right, because it's like one of these things that we don't really pay attention to, but there's going to be a label on whatever everyone's wearing around town. And that label is going to say made in China, made in Vietnam, made in Hong Kong, made in whatever country, which is fine because a lot of these countries really need those jobs.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, you know, do we know the labor standards that Hanes is putting for their garment workers?
We don't know.
Yeah,
and
we don't.
The fact of the matter is there could be 14-year-olds who are not given bathroom breaks, who are not going to school, who are by law forced to work 15, 20-hour days or whatever,
so,
asleep at their sewing machines. And do I want to be a supporter of that taskmaster?
So socially responsible underwear is underwear that's manufactured in a manner the workers are treated ethically and fairly and are paid a reasonable wage. So we should start – we should start looking for those labels now. So can you enlighten us, Simon, as to you know, this whole concept of social responsibility
right.
as it goes outside of the United States.
Yeah, so let's get off the topic of garments, because it's the idea of
yeah. underwear in particular, because I'm trying to take this seriously.
Let's talk about lending your business.
Yeah.
Right. So that the idea that all of our choices and all of our actions have economic ramifications, that is, the places we work, where we buy our coffee, whose hand we marry, like all the decisions we make affect the physical world and the way that people eat and live and work. So that same idea, a holistic life that increases the health of this world, is the same precept that I do in finance. So when people have a 401k, when they have an IRA, when they save for retirement, they usually do not think that there are choices and ways to invest their money which can actually improve the surface of the earth. There are places where you can put your 401k, which make people's lives better, and you can still earn a great return. And there are places where you can put your money and you earn a great return and people's lives are worse, right? So a great example of this, when I first got a grant to do neighborhood development here in Seattle, I said, wow, I've never had a real income before. This is cool. I should probably take some of this money and put it in an IRA. So I found a socially responsible mutual fund, and who will remain nameless. And I invested in that. I felt good about that, and I didn't think about it too much. And then I examined the holdings of the company, and their second holding was PepsiCo. And I'm sitting here going, wait a second. Like, you guys aren't socially responsible. Like, what, does PepsiCo have some statement about, like, they help the earth with their recycling program? Like, what they do is give people sugar. That's what they do, right?
And caffeine.
There's no way.
Hey, wait a minute. I got a 16-year-old that would argue with you that sugar is socially responsible.
Yeah, sure.
Well, it is, but it shouldn't be the second holding of your socially responsible.
That's a good point.
So then I said, okay, if that doesn't exist, what does exist? So I started researching all these different things, and I found this little niche side of investing called peer-to-peer lending. Mm. And what it was this, well, you know, we can talk about peer-to-peer lending, but basically it was socially responsible, and it checked all the boxes, and I started getting into it and deeper and
beautiful.
Deeper. And all of a sudden I realized I loved peer-to-peer lending.
Okay, so I think this is, and you started a company around it. This is where we're going to take our first break.
Sure.
Because that, as a natural tie into our next section of, okay, what is, now that we're understanding what that socially responsible investing exists,
right?
Now we want to figure out what peer-to-peer lending
is. Yeah, and
is.
I just heard a huge culture point that we want to talk about when we get back on the
air. Jot a note down, Steve. We'll be right back. All right, guys, you're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. We'll be right back with Simon Cunningham and socially responsible investing. We'll be right back.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy, to-do list, done, supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better, that politics crush people, innovation and creativity. And before you can say rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategies for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome because they get it. What they know for sure, you don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data. Not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
And we're back. This is Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. I'm Zach Gandra, your host, Steve Gandra. The awesome and the immutable who seems to be having some kind of... Are you having brain pain over
there? No, I want to ask a question.
You're making, you're making strange faces.
I want to ask a question to Simon. I'm having a hard time getting a word in edgewise.
I know. You're not good in the color commentary role, are you?
It's just a new role.
It's a better listening spot.
Anybody who wants to learn can learn.
Yeah, well, I know. So as we're moving forward, we left off right with what is peer-to-peer lending. Simon explained to us what socially responsible investing is. And in a great way that expressed not only his passion for it, but the benefit to all humanity for it. So do you just want it? You're raising your hand now. Are you just ready to go? I'm trying to fill people in.
I want to ask Simon.
Yeah, go for it.
So Simon, what I heard, I mean, in as culture guys, we're always looking for learning points that others can learn from that can be, you know, that others can duplicate. And what I heard in your, you know, the conversation that you just shared with us, is that you were doing something that it just wasn't clicking. You know, there was no chemistry. You weren't passionate about it. You had some successes, but you had some failures. Like, we do that in all those things. But that you did have this passion for social responsibility and for, you know, taking care of the needy, and you talked a lot about it. And it sounds like one of the key points that we want to talk to entrepreneurs about is you got to find your sweet spot in terms of something that you're really passionate about, a deep down core value, a personal value, not a corporate value, but a core personal value that you're really passionate about, that's part of who you are, part of your fiber. And if you're working on building your entrepreneurial business on that core fiber, that sounds like it's one of the first ingredients to a successful entrepreneurial enterprise. Am I on track with that?
Yeah. I will say that the lesson that I learned from that process wasn't what am I passionate about, because I've always been passionate about all these things. The lesson that I had to learn was what am I good at? What are my limitations? And what really kicked my butt out of my previous line of work and into this one was passion is not enough. Like,
yeah, that's good.
I burned out largely because I was not naturally good or gifted at many of the tasks that were in front of me. And unlike in some entrepreneurial jobs, you can just outsource that stuff, right? Like, let's say you're not good at scheduling or press and media. You just find somebody to do that work for you. But unfortunately, in community development, I actually was in a job where I could not outsource the work that I was doing unless I would bring on a partner. So I looked for a partner for a long time, and I just couldn't find it, which is fine. And long story short, yeah, like what kicked my butt out of that one and into this was not so much, because I do believe in following your passion. At the end of the day, that's really what starts and stops the whole thing. For my particular situation, it was actually an inability to organically do the work that I needed to do. I had to really force myself, and I believe almost anyone can do almost anything, but the calories it takes us to do the things we're skilled at is so much more efficient. You know, like, mm-hmm. I can naturally communicate anything to anyone pretty easily without even thinking about it. It's like, you know, I put in 5 calories, I get let's say 1,000 units of output. But if I am asked to organize a sock drawer or something, like, let's say counsel somebody in a period of grief with a parent who's passed away, like, I put in like 1,000 calories and I get, let's say, 300 units of output, right? So it's a question of efficiency. How are our brains wired? And that was the thing that got me out of that. So
that's huge. Get back into what is peer-to-peer lending and is it socially responsible?
Right. So peer-to-peer lending is the large-scale lending of money between people online. So it is the large scale lending. It's the crowdfunding of lines of credit between people over the internet directly to and from one another.
Yeah.
So back in the day, the banks were these giant pools of capital. They were basically these giant pools of money. And if you needed a loan, you know, you'd say, okay, you know, Mr. Banker, I need 30 grand. And I really do deserve this. And they would run your credit and they would talk to you. You'd come and sit down with them. They'd get to know you. It's like this big whole lengthy process. It takes all this time. And then the internet came around and all of a sudden, you could directly have people fund loans to and from each other. And you can do it in a crowdfunding kind of way. So previously where you would go to a banker and you know, slice off a $30,000 portion of his huge pile of money. Now you can just go on the internet. They pull your credit. They look at you to see if you're a good investment. You know, if you're going to pay back your loan. And if you pass their credit standards, then you have all these people who pile in $25, $50, $100, $1,000. And you can have loans as large as $35,000 funded by hundreds of people at once. Mm. So it's cool because it's basically like what MP3s did to the record industry, where in 1990, I'm going to get this date wrong, in 1998, was it 8, Napster launched? Or was it 93?
Yeah, it was probably... I bet it was 96 or 97 because I was in my freshman or sophomore year of college.
Okay. So let's say 97 Napster launches. You know, basically the record industry went from a $19 billion industry down to a $9 billion industry in something like 6 years.
Right.
You know, because it used to be a very inefficient market. You used to have to spend $12. You'd get a plastic CD that you had to drive your car and spend gasoline to go purchase. And you would listen to basically two songs on it over and over and over and over.
Right.
Right. And now... you spend $1, you don't go anywhere, you get it through your computer, and you can listen to just those two songs, so you don't waste any of your money. So it becomes this really amazing, efficient vehicle to get a great product, but at the same time, who takes the loss there? These giant intermediaries, these giant, the middlemen who were profiteering and the giant pools of capital called record companies. I mean, you had to get a record deal back in those days, and now you just, you know, Macklemore probably produced his album for like... you know, I don't know, $5,000.
The fact that he's still indie and is doing what he's doing wouldn't have been possible before that, you know?
Right. So that same changeover is happening in every industry. You have Airbnb destroying the hotel industry. You have Uber disintermediating the entire taxi cab industry. And so peer-to-peer lending is simply that same, what we call the disintermediation of the economy is happening in finance. So it's cutting banks out of the equation and allowing, just like Uber drivers and Uber passengers are connecting over an app, you have lenders and borrowers connecting directly to each other over a website.
Interesting. That's shocking. I mean, I've heard you describe it before, but I've never understood it as much as I do right now.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
And basically, you and your firm are the connector, right?
No. So basically the exchanges, so they're these marketplaces, and the two that I focus on are called Lending Club and Prosper. There are these two exchanges, and they allow those two people to come together, and they kind of foster the connection between these two people. So when somebody needs a loan, let's use Lending Club because they're the market leader right now. Lending Club will actually underwrite the person. So the person will say, yeah, I need $10,000. Lending Club pulls their credit. They say, yep, this person definitely can get a loan with us, and then they will put all the credit information on the website, and then all these investors can come in, and just because Lending Club has already underwritten, meaning they've given the approval to these borrowers, they can just assume that these loans are going to perform a certain way. They don't have to take on a bunch of risks. So they can say, oh, Lending Club approved it. It's all good. So then they put their money in there, and then Lending Club facilitates the payments. And then does collections if borrowers default.
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds like if you were to compare, okay, say I'm just going to openly compare it. You're going to compare the lending club to Kickstarter.
Right. Yeah. No. Kickstarter
has no accountability.
Right.
I've invested in a Kickstarter company. Actually, Steve, I bought you a Christmas present that has never come, and it's been a year and a half, and I can't
you
get my money back.
You just reminded me of that.
I know, because I got me one too. I gave them $100, $50 per, and I've seen nothing for it.
Yep.
And
that's
what
this
is a sure, there's accountability now.
That's right, yeah. If somebody asks for, let's say, $10,000 to invent a better, you know, USB Bluetooth speaker for their phone, and in Lending Club, if they don't actually pay their investors back, they get a nasty mark in their credit score.
Mm.
So,
wow.
And then it goes into collections.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I love it.
Yeah.
So were you investing through this before you started the company?
Correct. Yeah. So that's, you know, basically when I got this job to do church neighborhood development in Seattle, I got, you know, started getting these paychecks, and I was like, and I'd never gotten a paycheck in my life. So I was just so excited.
Yeah.
So I got the socially responsible mutual fund, ended up not being very socially responsible. And then I found peer-to-peer lending, and I moved all of my investments over to that. And I did that for a while, and I loved it. So I said, why don't I start a website about this? So then I did, you know.
And how, I mean, obviously you were successful at those investments.
Right, yeah. I've been earning over a 10% return now for years. I mean, you know, but I'm kind of a, you know, I'm young, I'm single, I can take on more risk than most investors, so I'm right. kind of the, I'm on the riskier side of the investor pool, let's put it that way. But, so what my site does, just to kind of...
Hold on, I'm going to cut you off, we're going to take a break, in the next section we're going to talk about Lending Memo.
Great.
All right, guys, we are going into our second break here on Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM, and we have Simon Cunningham with LendingMemo.com. We'll be right back.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy, to-do list done, supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better, that politics crush people, innovation and creativity. And before you can say rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategies for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome because they get it. What they know for sure? You don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data, not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. If you have a question for Simon, and you are interested in getting involved in peer-to-peer lending, we want you to get a hold of him directly. You can email us at asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com. Or Simon, how do they get a hold of you?
You can go to the website as lendingmemo.com, or you can just email me at simon@lendingmemo.com.
Perfect. And so if you haven't been listening over the last two segments of this, we're talking to Simon Cunningham from LendingMemo.com, been quoted by Forbes and CNBC in regards to his education that he's putting out there on the internet for people on peer-to-peer lending. We also heard his story. We also heard his entrepreneur passion. And I think, Steve, you hit on this, which is really, really good that I jotted down. I just wrote down entrepreneurial tips that you questioned Simon about passion, and Simon was like, it actually wasn't about passion. It was about efficiency for me. And I was more efficient at doing this than I was at anything else.
Well, when you got passion to do something that you're good at doing,
right?
That's a sweet spot.
That is.
That's a sweet spot. And it sounds like, Simon, you've identified it for yourself, and it's growing like crazy.
Yeah. And I love, Simon, how you worded that, because I don't think I've ever heard anybody word, I'm putting in 5 calories and I'm getting 1,000 output back. And
right.
I want to stick in my niche where I am the most effective. I mean, that's beautifully said. Okay, so tell us about Lending Memo. Tell us about how you started Lending Memo and what Lending Memo is doing to the date.
Sure. Okay. So imagine somebody is trying to teach someone how to use the stock market, right? And they have a website called stockmarketeducation.com, stockmemo.com. There's probably actually a website out there called Stock Memo. I do not. This is no endorsement.
Yeah.
But yeah. So let's say there was a website out there called AmazingStockEducation.com, and you could go there, and there's a guy talking about stocks, and he's talking about price over earning ratios, and he's talking about, you know, quarterly reports and market trends, and he's saying this is how you diversify, and this is what characterizes a blue chip stock. And, you know, he's giving all this terminology, and then, but you don't actually buy stocks on his website. What there are is there's links in his website to the actual exchanges where you can make those, where you can actually do the stock trading. So that's basically what I do with Lending Memo. We're just education. We just serve small dollar retail investors, people who generally invest less than $20,000. We are, it's a lot of media. In fact, it's almost all media. There's some software available on the website, but mostly it's, blog posts, videos, ebooks, stuff like that. Helping people to understand and get involved in the process, helping them to earn great returns.
Yeah.
So, yep.
And Simon, from what I know, and you can share as much as you feel comfortable with sharing, but when you launched Lending Memo, I remember when you launched Lending Memo, and I remember you sharing with me the shocking numbers of people that were coming through your website. Did you plan for that, or is that accidental, or was it a little bit of both? Or
I wouldn't say it's shocking numbers, actually. So yeah, no, so definitely it is a growing industry. In fact, it's kind of in its infancy currently.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, it is still very much just beginning. I think what I was shocked by was just the ability to plug into this website and to get something going and get the ball rolling and to have traction around this thing. I thought that was pretty
right.
cool.
Right.
And particularly in a way to the ability to transfer and transition out of kind of a more religious vocation into something like socially responsible financial education was
pretty
cool.
Like you're pretty religious about socially responsible lending.
Yeah, that's right. I would say in many ways I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steve, I hate you as a color commentary.
You know,
no, that was good. That was funny. I like that.
Yeah. But no, it is.
He
believes in what he's doing, and that's the second point that I pulled out in listening to Simon that other entrepreneurs can learn from. You know, he first taught us that, you know, it's not just passion, it's effectiveness. You got to be good at what you're doing as well as love what you're doing, because you can love it and go broke and, you know, not eat.
Right.
But now, you know, he's also taught us additionally that it goes past that as well.
Yeah.
So,
well, not only does Simon believe in what he's doing, Forbes and CNBC caught what you're doing and wanted to have you chat about it. They quoted you, numerous times, a couple times? How'd that work, Simon?
So the main way that kind of major press has picked up on my website has actually been in references. So, like, for instance, my website was the only – so Lending Club went public last month, December 11th. And when they went public, they were the fourth largest internet IPO in American history after Google, Twitter, and Facebook.
Mm.
So huge, huge IPO that happened with them. So when they were talking about their reasons for going public, Lending Memo was the only website that the CEO of Lending Club publicly talked about his reasons for going public. So he didn't do it anywhere else. So we kind of had the scoop for why is this company wanting to go public on the U.S. stock market? And so all that to say is that you had a lot of companies like CNBC quote Lending Memo and say, as reported on the peer-to-peer lending site Lending Memo, you know, the CEO of Lending Club is going public for these reasons. So I have done some interviews, but all the major press, like I've been multiple times on Wall Street Journal's Market Watch, and stuff like that, but it's all been references, them saying, you know, here's a statement from Lending Memo, here's a quote from an interview on Lending Memo, here's an article on Lending Memo. So I've yet to have like an interview on like talk.
But I think what's incredible about that is they are looking to you and Lending Memo as these guys know this market. And these guys know this business.
I think it's fair to say it's an authority site around this topic. Yeah. And I'm pretty proud about that.
I want to go back to one of those, the big point that we talked about a second ago. It's very evident, Simon, that as you kind of shared your story from the very beginning, that all along you've deep down believed in helping people and doing it in what you've now, you know, labeled as a socially responsible way or a win-win way, where it's not about losing and winning. It's about everybody winning, and that's the way that you've chosen to operate, and it's your philosophy. And as you've gotten connected with, you know, a passion that you have and something that you're good at and are effective at and continue to march down this track of something that you truly believe in, which is helping people and doing it in a win-win sort of way, you've caught an industry that is just kind of on the – you know, early stages, and you're heading up the curve. So all of these things are key factors that I think any entrepreneur could learn from. If in fact their, you know, their desire is to do something that they're passionate about rather than just, you know, making a buck. There's a lot of ways to make a buck, but it sounds like you're having fun making a buck.
Well, this is the thing is that, so also a big factor in this whole process for me has been my struggles in my health struggles. So I have, I'm diagnosed with something called chronic fatigue syndrome. I got it after having mono a few years ago. 10% of the people who get mono get chronic fatigue after mono, which is just your body. It's basically feeling you have mono symptoms every day and it doesn't go away. And so I've had basically mono symptoms for two and a half, three years now. And so one of the things that I've really learned is that entrepreneurship, it means going into the unknown and trying new things, right? And so probably half the battle for me has really been an emotional process. That is, how do you deal with the anxiety and the stress of the unknown, of being able to rest despite the fact that you don't necessarily know what tomorrow is going to look like or how secure and how stable the future is going to be? And so there's kind of two big pieces of advice that I've heard people give business owners over and over and over. And is that the first is get out there, boots on the ground, do the work, hit the streets, push it, work harder, work longer, right? And I think that is a great piece of advice specifically for people who think that they can start a business off, you know, what, 5 minutes a day, or what are the get rich quick off an hour a day sitting at your home kind of stuff. Like, to start a business takes a tremendous amount of work. And you have to love it and you have to have a passion around it. But ultimately, you really have to put a lot of time in. And I can't even imagine what that's like having kids and at the same time. So that's the one side. But the other side is really knowing your limitations. Because if you don't understand and being able to see, you know, here are my limitations, this is what I can't do, you're just asking to burn out in 18 months. Wow. I mean, you're just begging it. And when you burn out, it's not your job that's going to die. Your social relationships, your friendships and family relationships are going to be hurt as well. You may permanently damage the quality of life that you had before you went in. So, you know, that's what's so beautiful and so terrifying about entrepreneurship is it's both a test in our ability to work, but it's also a test in our ability to choose when to not work and when to stop working.
Mm-hmm. That's beautifully said. I think we probably need to go probably in the last segment today, talk about what are the things that helped you know your limitations.
Right.
Because I can look at my life right now and what I do with Excellent Cultures, and then I do some social media contracting on the side, and then I'm looking to start a company in 2015, and I don't know how to know my limitations. Right. Like, I tend to be the guy that just runs, and then when I die, I die. Like, literally, all of a sudden, I'm just exhausted and can't do anything for a week or something.
Right.
So let's talk about that when we get back. Simon, thanks for your transparency. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. send us an email. If you got a question for Simon, ask us at asktheexperts@excellentcultures.com. And we'll be right back. This is our last break. We'll be back with Simon from LendingMemo.com right after this.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy, to-do list, done, supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull, and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better, that politics crush people, innovation, and creativity. And before you can say, rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategies for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome because they get it. What they know for sure? You don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data, not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
We're back, everybody, and you are listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. We have with us our special guest outside of the always special immutable Steve Gandra. But also we have with us Simon Cunningham from LendingMemo.com. And if you haven't and you're just cluing in, check out LendingMemo.com or check out this podcast soon after listening live here on Clay 1180 AM at excellentcultures.com. Because there is some good stuff here for entrepreneurs, for those of you that are frustrated in your current job situations. And also, Simon, you were just sharing with us before the break that you suffer from chronic fatigue syndrome, which is regular mono symptoms, even though you aren't dealing with mono anymore. But you shared something very beautiful there, that as an entrepreneur, as a person, or as a human being, it's important to know your limitations. And I openly shared, I don't know my limitations well. Steve, I felt like you were going to chime in there.
What I was going to say is Simon doesn't sound very fatigued to me. I mean, when you know, and when I hear him talk about, you know, what he's done in this business that he has started in, you know, what it's doing and how it's going. I mean, it, you know, the energy just comes through the airwaves.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can tell that even though he's fighting with this, you know, this disease and these symptoms, there's something going on inside of him that's really making a huge positive difference. And, you know, it's not something that you can obviously, you can't bottle and sell it, but he's hit on some really, really solid principles here today that I think other entrepreneurs can certainly learn from. And I mean, the fact that it works is not just documented by the success of his firm.
Right.
You know, you can hear, you know, like I said earlier, you can feel the energy just coming through the airwaves when he talks about what he's doing and how he's done it.
Absolutely. And I think the beautiful thing, like Simon, I've mentioned to you before, and Steve and I haven't talked about it yet, but I'm involved in a cohort right now of entrepreneurs. And the number one thing everybody's saying in this cohort is, I don't know when to stop working. And I'm already at the point, like, I'm old enough. I'm 37 years old. I've gone through a corporate, a religious corporation system like you did, where I got burnout. You know my story. And I'm at a point like, man, I don't got time to live life burnout, tired, and a workaholic. I want to live, Simon, I want to live how you're living. So that is a key thing. How do we diagnose our own limitations and then live well out of that? Like what I think most of us do is we ignore our limitations and just go
right.
until we die.
Right. So there's two things going on. First of all, entrepreneurs and anybody who's in a business or has a high pressure job needs to realize that the stresses that puts on their system largely are psychological.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so yeah, you need to exercise and you have to exercise, not an option. And you need to eat well. So that means clean food throughout the day.
Right.
Have consistent wake sleep rhythms. I don't drink, I don't smoke, don't do drugs or anything. So that just goes without saying. But a big part of this is psychological well-being. So I would say if you're in a high-pressure job that requires a lot out of you, you've got to be in therapy as part of your month.
Yeah.
So I've gone through I didn't have any sort of massive trauma in my life or anything, but as part of the emotional well-being for myself, I've been in psychotherapy for a number of years just to get, you know, it's like going to the gym for your brain, and there's no shame in that. It's
right.
part of understanding what are your neural pathways. You know, where do you go when you have stress, and how can you navigate that stress in a way that is conducive to healthy living, and that is a positive narrative rather than a negative one. So I would say that would be key and crucial for anybody who's doing that.
Yeah.
And a good way to know, like, okay, you know, do I have it together? Because a lot of people say, well, I have it together pretty good. So here's what I would ask them. Do they go through big feast famine swings in their life? Right? Are they on top of the world on 1 week, and then the next week the bottom falls out, and they're not sure that they are ever going to work again, and they don't know if they like their job. And the next week they're back on top, and they feel huge and amazing, and the world is their oyster. And then the bottom falls out again. And so that's just called volatility, and that means that there isn't a real stable source of energy behind it all.
Mm-hmm.
So once somebody, though, they have a good understanding of themselves, they have, you know, they've had some good psychotherapy, they've understood the way that their mind works, the way that they've got their body together, they can start becoming really regular. And so they can choose when to exert themselves and when not, and really get in touch with your limits. And you, and frankly, just become an incredibly efficient physical cell of a person.
Yeah.
Right?
There's that word again, efficiency.
It's all about efficiency. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, I can concur, Steve, and you can too, that I mean, I've had seasons in my life where I've had coaching, and I've had seasons in my life where I've had therapy, and in all of those seasons, I learned more about myself, and I had help from somebody outside of me to reveal what was going on within me.
Yep.
And it's always been super healthy. We do stuff like that with clients all the time. That's what we do. That's why we coach. That's why we do what we do, and we use... Everything we use is psychologically tooled and diagnosable through data and doctors' research and scientific study.
Yep.
So there's a lot that goes into that. That's beautiful. Steve, how you doing over there?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I'm enjoying listening. I'm enjoying listening to, you know, Simon share, you know, his insights in a pretty transparent manner. And we just heard another insight that's a great learning point for entrepreneurs. I mean, get yourself a really good therapist that can help you understand more about you, how you function at your best, and help you stay on track and stay out of the highs and lows and go for the even keel of upward momentum.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I would say, I would add to that, what's been helpful to me is, Simon, you're not married, but I am married.
Right.
And for years of my marriage, I put the weight on my wife to be my therapist.
Yeah,
and that is not something any spouse
right.
can
there's
do.
There's a really beautiful quote I heard the other day, and it said, I used to say, and this is two married people talking to each other, I used to say, you take care of me, and I'll take care of you. And now I believe in saying, I'll take care of me for you, and you take care of you for me.
Boom. That's huge. Do you remember who said that?
sounds like Simon said it.
Simon said
no,
it. You get it if
it.
We
it's
don't
a
know.
Quote from a beautiful quote I read online actually. So
yeah,
Google it. But it's it's basically that in a nutshell.
I mean, it's beautifully true. I mean, in my wife and I's life, last year her mother passed away, and in the last year she's gone through some great therapy, and it's been the most helpful thing to us of realizing that is I'll take care of me.
I'll take care of me for you,
right.
And you take care of you for me.
And it's been the most freeing thing in our relationship and marriage to date is that we are learning to do that.
Yep.
And that's what love is, right? It's not selfishness. Yeah. It's love and caring for one another.
Yep.
Okay, Simon. Steve, do you want to give a moment? We're at the end of our tail end of our show. And Simon, we didn't tell you about this, so this is a surprise. And you've kind of been doing it all through the show.
Sure.
But we ask every leader that we talk to put on their coach's hat. What's the coaching hat comment today, Steve?
Well, what I was going to say is, and that I always like to say, is that, Simon, if you could put on your coaching hat for a few minutes and speak to, you know, other entrepreneurs like yourself or even wannabe entrepreneurs in a nutshell, I mean, what advice could you give them that you think could really help them get to where you've gotten based on what you've learned?
I am grieved by the number of people who live miserably and don't act to change the way that they live. Mm. So if anything, I could say, if you're working in a job that you're mistreated at, if you are living in occupation that makes your life really terrible and stressful and you don't feel joy and satisfaction over what you do, the world is a huge, huge, rich place full of opportunity, and it requires taking on risk and being adventurous, but there is just so much richness in getting out there and trying to do new and different lines of work outside of what we are stuck in our day-to-day living, right? And so, yes, like, you know, all the things that we've talked about today, like knowing your limits and having emotional health and knowing when to stop working. But I would say through all of that, like, like, love yourself to the point that do not tolerate a job or a occupational situation that makes you feel less than.
Yeah.
But really, just know that the world is so big and so rich, and there's so much opportunity out there to do amazing, fun, interesting things. And so just don't settle, you know? Just don't settle.
Absolutely beautiful. Simon, thanks for being with us today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean, listeners, you've heard us talk time and time again about, you know, we live in a country where 70%+ of workers who work for employers tell the confidential survey that they are disengaged in their jobs. I think Simon's done a wonderful job of describing how to get engaged and re-engaged in something that not only you're passionate about, but you're effective at, and that you can pull off, and how to stay there and keep it moving in the right direction.
Absolutely. Sure. I all through the show, we need to stop talking and get off the air right now, but all through the show, Steve, I keep, in hearing Simon's story, hearing Simon's passion and his heart, I keep thinking of Theo Chocolate. And we got to interview their CEO. What was his name?
Cool. Joe? Yeah, we should run that show again.
Yeah.
We should run that again because, you know, Joe Winnie, the founder of Theo Chocolate, you know, same thing. Socially responsible business that
started out of him seeing the injustice of chocolate farmers across the world.
The workers, the workers. Yeah.
So absolutely. You can grab that show right now on our podcast at excellentcultures.com on iTunes, soon to be on Stitcher for you Android folks. But thank you. Simon, thanks a lot. You guys want to check out Simon, go to lendingmemo.com right now. Simon, stay on the line. We'll say goodbye when we get off the air. But
great.
Check out lendingmemo.com. And tune in next week for Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. We're signing off.